John F. from Conscious Contact in Doylestown.
I like this microphone. It makes me feel tall. Hi, everybody. I'm John. I'm an alcoholic.
Hey, John.
I'm grateful and honored to be here tonight at a meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous, carrying a message. I actually like to start off with a prayer sometimes when I read and when I speak. So tonight, give me a minute. I want to start with the seventh step prayer. My Creator, I'm now willing that you should have all of me, good and bad. I pray that you now remove from me every single defect of character which stands in the way of my usefulness to you and my fellows. Grant me strength as I go out from here to do your bidding. Amen. somebody recently, I heard a speaker talking about alcoholism and their definition of alcoholism. And I never heard it put this way before, but he said, you know, to me, like, being an alcoholic is like you're on a bus, like, say, sat the bus by yourself, sitting in the back. Nobody else on the bus but the driver. Somebody gets on at the next stop. And they come down and they sit right next to you. Like, the whole bus is empty, but they sit right next to you. And after a while, you can feel them staring at you. And then all of a sudden, they're really staring at you. And then, like, they have their finger in your face. And then, you know, they're pressing your face against the glass with their feet. Like, that's alcoholism for me. It's like me not drinking. If I'm not doing the work, I'm restless, I'm irritable, and I'm discontent to the point where I can't stand myself or anything else. And that feeling, just overwhelming feeling of impending doom, is on me. And for me, that's alcoholism. It's easy when I'm drinking because I have no chance. I have no chance against it. So I give up constantly, you know. Because there were so many times I tried to stop by myself. You know, there were so many times I was like, oh my God, I can't do this anymore. You know, God, please just let me die right here. I can't go through that again. You know, and a few hours later, you know how it is. And I'd be right back at it. You know, and it might not take that long. I might roll over and be like, oh my God, there's a half a bottle left. How does that happen? You know, and start drinking before I get out of bed. I had no off button. I didn't black out, you know, like I completely shut off. That's how I drank and drugged. And what I mean by that is like, I'd go and go and go and go and go and, you know, just nonstop, 24/7. You know, because I'd be using dry goods to stay awake, and, you know, I wouldn't sleep for days and days and days. And then I would have a seizure, have a grand mal seizure. And I think I had 6 in total. Where, like, you just black, you're done. You know, and a couple times I wound up in the hospital, and a couple times I just woke up at home, shoved it off, went about my business. Today, my sobriety is the most important thing in my life. And I'm really careful about what I do, where I go, what I listen to, and what I watch. You know, I don't have the luxury of watching Wolves of Wall Street anymore. Because it's just going to turn me on. And it's just everything that I love. And why would I torture myself like that? It's only going to put bad thoughts in my head. And that's not who I want to be today. You know, it used to look exciting. And now it just looks like debauchery. I'm careful about what I listen to, too. Like, you know, I used to get my truck in the morning. And I would put the music on, like, something really smooth, like Dokken or, like, old Van Halen, you know, and crank it up so loud that, like, you know, I'd be deaf by the time I got out. And now I realize that, like, I did that just to stop the noise in my head, you know, because I just couldn't deal with myself and all the stuff that went on inside me. I'll go back a little bit. I grew up in Doylestown. We lived outside Doylestown in Plumsteadville. As a kid, I was involved in everything. I loved everybody, and everybody loved me. And I had no idea I was an alcoholic at the time. Looking back on it now, after doing work, you know, you see, you can see, like, I can see, like, you know, I was 4 years old. I used to sneak downstairs in the middle of the night and eat sugar out of the sugar bowl. Like, who does that? I don't. You know, my brother had a chemistry set, and again, like, I'd sneak down to where he had it, and I would open everything up and, like, smell it, sniff it. And I'm talking, I was little, you know, and I liked it all. And I'd be the kid who put his tongue on the batteries, you know, because I liked it. You know, I liked it. I liked anything, I guess, that made me not be me or enhance who I was. So growing up in Doylestown, I went to CB East. You know, I had a great, everything was great, you know, but I was already doing those little things that creep up on us, through time. You know, I remember one night, I was drinking with a bunch of my friends, and my ex-girlfriend had parked her car at this party. And I was really angry with her, so I coerced everybody into picking her car up and flipping it over. You know, and, like, I don't know where that came from. I wasn't even angry with her. You know, but, like, put enough Paul Masson Chablis in me that we stole from work in the big 9-gallon bottle. You know, and you never know what's going to happen. There was another girl who broke up with me and drunk, went to her house and chopped down trees on her father's front yard. That was not good. You know, but, like, I had, they were, like, my two major scrapes as a kid. You know, but then the one thing I could always do is I could always work. And no matter what, I could be dying, I'd get up and go to work. So I was in the restaurant business, which is like, this is like Candyland. You know, it's the greatest thing ever. I worked in the back of the house. I have three older brothers. They were chefs. So, like, I was cooking professionally by the time I was like 14, 15 years old and really knowing what I was doing. So, again, it was perfect for a guy like me because I didn't have to do anything. I didn't have to study. You know, it wasn't hard for me. So it was like, you know, here I am, this little guy, and, you know, I'm working at fine dining establishments in Bucks County, you know, learning all kinds of stuff. And working with some of the best chefs in the area. And I got good enough, that at 21, I got my first position as an executive chef. And I went to Johnson & Wales for a little while, but decided that I knew a lot more than they did because they're just an institution of higher learning and I'm me. So, you know, I decided to leave there. And I came back home and I got this job. So I get certified as an executive chef with the Philadelphia Chefs Association, and I'm off to the races. Now, I haven't touched on this too much, but, like, my ego is, like, through the roof at all times. Because, you know, I was kind of kidding about the microphone, but, you know, I stopped growing probably when I was in 10th grade, and, you know, I played all sports, so, like, I did everything. And I could never live up to myself after that because I was shorter than I wanted to be. And, you know, I was constantly in a battle with myself, like, because then everything had to be perfect. If I wasn't going to be tall, I was going to be perfect at everything I did, the way I looked, what I drove, how I worked, just everything. And I'm just going to beat you at everything. You know, if you could drink 10 fifths, I'm going to drink 12. You know, if you're going to go to the gym and bench X, Y, and Z, I'm going to outdo you. You know, and it's just the way that I lived my life. And it was like, it just set the table for the judgment, you know, that just became my life, which just went into all of the resentments. And it's unbelievable. Like, this book shows us all this stuff. And I'm seeing it really, like, through eyes for the first time. You know, and you'll understand that in a little bit. Because you know what? Like, when I pray today, before I leave my house, you know, I pray that I'm kind and loving to everybody that I come in contact with. You know, and it's just not how I lived my life for a long time. And that's a miracle. So, anyway, off to the races in the restaurant industry. I work at a lot of fine dining places up here, like I said, and then I get a job in the movie industry. So now, here I am, I'm like 24 years old. I'm just on fire. I'm drinking all the time, but like, I'm just, like, there's so much going on. And I think that everything's normal. And I start traveling around the country and around the world feeding the cast and crew on movie sets. So I'm the executive chef on these movie sets and, like, literally, like, the biggest names in Hollywood that you can think of, you know, are on my trail. And I'm an exciting guy at the time because, like, alcohol is still sort of working for me, you know. So, you know, certain people would be on my trailer in the morning doing dry goods, and other people would come up and just want coffee, and other people would come up and, you know, there'd be other things going on. And, you know, that's just, it was crazy because it was like after a while, like, you know, I was really, really good at what I did. And like, if the guy who ran the cable across the grass to plug in the electricity, like, if I knew what he wanted, I made it for him, like, the best every day. So everybody loved me, which was great for my ego also. And so you got to get the picture. Like, I'm starting to gain momentum. I'm meeting directors. I'm getting flown all over the country. I'm, like, living this life, like, you know, it was just crazy. It was really decadent. And the only difference was, like, you know, I thought they were doing it for me. You know, like, I literally, like, would walk on the sets and, like, think, like, you know, well, they decided to make this movie because I'm cooking here. You know, there's no doubt about it. You know, and it sounds funny, but, you know, like, to a point, it's really true. And that just, that momentum, it just gained momentum, and it just made me become more self-reliant. You know, and the only thing I think worse than being an alcohol and being self-reliant is being an alcohol, self-reliant, and semi-successful at it, because it just masks everything and just prolongs the agony. So anyway, this goes on for a while. I'm really starting to get bad now because I'm drinking in the morning, X, Y, and Z. So I decide to come home because I haven't been home in years. I come home, I meet a woman, and, we get married. So that marriage lasts, 3 years. It was postponed once because I got in a car accident, where I had a seizure at the wheel and hit a bus, a van, and some other stuff, and lied my way out of that. And we postponed the wedding like 6 months, and I had no insurance. No, it was like the first time she saw like who I really was. No insurance, no registration. I hadn't paid for the car in months, you know, but everything was good, you know, everything was good. And, so anyway, we get married and, it goes just like you kind of think it would. And it starts off okay, and I start thinking, you know, I'm like, I'm going to be better, this is going to be great for me. It didn't last long. And it was the first time, like, I woke up one morning, like, really hungover, with my tongue, like, on the roof of my mouth. I don't know if any of you have ever been there before. But, like, I ran into the kitchen and grabbed this glass of water on the counter and drank it. And it wasn't water, it was vodka. It was the first time. It was, like, 5:30 in the morning. And I pounded, like, 6 ounces of vodka. And from that day on, it was 24/7. Like, for real, for real. And, yeah, man, it's just crazy. You know, so we wound up getting divorced. So meantime, I'm like alienated from my regular family. They have no idea any of the stuff that's going on. But I had been in and out of AA at this point, so I have a taste of it. Because my wife was like, well, can you go to AA or else I'm leaving? She's like, okay, I'll go to AA, and I would go to meetings during the day before work, and then I'd go to the state store, and then I would go to work. And you can't quit drinking, they say, and that's the truth. And, you know, that carried on for a while, but it's just like the lies are piling up. It just gets worse and worse and worse. So anyway, we get divorced, and my life is just spiraling downhill at this point. And now, like, the alcohol's not working, the drugs aren't working, like, nothing's working, you know? Like, for a point of time, it was like, I can't sit here and tell you, like, I didn't have fun. I had a load of fun. I had so much fun drinking and drugging, you know? But then there came the day that it stopped. It stopped working. Like, and then I started using it to try and feel better, because nothing made me feel better anymore. You know, and I was just miserable. And then I started hating myself. Then I'm not looking in the mirror anymore. And I couldn't care less what I look like. And I'm so disgusted with myself at this point. Like, I'm just praying that I die someday, you know? Like, when you're driving down the road and you're staring at that same tree every day when you pass it. And you're like, it'd be a lot easier if I just turned in and just ended it all. But I don't have the guts to do that, you know? And that's the honest God truth. So anyway, it brings us to like 1996. I had it right before I got divorced. I should bring this up. I went to a rehab, but you know, I went to save my marriage. I went to make everybody happy, appease everybody, save my job, like all that stuff. So I went down to Ashley in Howard Grace, Maryland. And it was really cool, and I was like, look, it's the dude from the Chalk Talks, you know? Like, Father Martin was up there doing his thing. And I learned a lot there, even though I wasn't listening. You know, I was really there just for vacation. And, you know, I came out, and I didn't go to a meeting or anything. And, you know, it wasn't too long after that, you know, I was drinking again. And then it was every day at the state store, you know, all that noise. And now I'm to the point where, like, you know, I'd go to the state store, I'd get what I needed, but then periodically I would binge drink on top of my drinking, which was like, that was really, really bad. You know, like, vodka is what keeps me alive. But tonight I'm going to go out and put a tequila load on top of vodka, and that'll be really good. So anyway, so like at this point, I'm out of rehab, I'm divorced, I'm living in my parents' house, completely miserable. And one night I was just praying to God, I was like, God, please let me just die. Please just let me die here. You know? And that's what it brought me to. And he didn't. And the last thing I said was, or make this stop. So on August 8th, 1996, I walked into my first meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous that I wanted to be at. And when I came in, the fellowship took me and showed me how not to drink. and showed me a new way of living that I was never thought possible. And I was all in. I was all in for a long time. My ex-wife and I got married a couple years after I was sober. We had three more children. Oh, I forgot to mention, we were going through divorce proceedings and actually used to go like out to lunch after we were in the courthouse, which is the craziest thing in the world. And somehow she got pregnant while we were going through being divorced. Make a long story short, we got remarried and I had already had one daughter and then I had three more daughters after we got remarried, one right after another. And AA was working in my life. You know, it was a big part of my life. I was still going to five meetings a week, you know, and I was involved and, you know, I started a company and that started growing and I had people from the program working for me. And it was a really, really good time. And that lasted for a long time. So I'm going to fast forward a little bit. It brings to about the time I'm about 17 years sober. So I'm still on cruise control, but now I go to meetings. There was two meetings that I went to every week, no matter what. And the other ones were hit or miss. And life started to creep in. And my program took a hit. Now I'm going to tell you the next part of this story. But I'll tell you, I didn't know until the day I was going into rehab again how far I had just slipped away. You know, and it happens so slowly. And it's one thing at a time. You know, my wife drank and drinks. And, you know, like it was just the little things like, we used to go out, but she'd have like, we'd go out to dinner somewhere and then she'd have a beer. We'd stop somewhere and she'd have a beer. And then we would go home. And like the beer at home was always kept like downstairs in the basement refrigerator. And I could deal with that, you know, because I never went in there anyway. And it didn't bother me. I didn't think about it. You know, 17 years sober, for God's sakes. Until I did start thinking about it. Because then, you know, the one beer turned into, you know, five beers for her, and then I'm living vicariously through her drinking, you know, and then I'm having these emotional hangovers afterwards because I'm so freaking, like, I'm out of my mind jealous that, like, they can do that, they can all do that, and I can't. That guy's way worse than I was. How can I not drink and he can? You know, like, I'm comparing myself to everybody else. Oh, my God, and it started getting really, really bad. And, like, you know, untreated alcoholism, call it whatever you want, you know, but I started feeling the restless, irritable, discontent feelings. And, you know, like, on the outside, nobody knew how I felt. I was too embarrassed to talk to my sponsor about it. Because here I am, I'm 17 years, 18 years sober, 19 years sober, 20 years sober. You know, so I'm living inside, I'm just like being torn apart. It doesn't dawn on me to go back and, you know, rework the steps, get involved again, you know, do all that stuff. Now, you know, I'm a member of the country club and, you know, I have two businesses, yada, yada, yada. And in no way am I talking about any of this stuff with any kind of big shotism or any of that stuff. It's just my story. So now I'm playing golf like five times a week. And my business is suffering because of it. But I don't care. Because the shine has worn off of that. You know, that's just something that provides me money. You know, and it's really a pain in the ass at this point to me. And you know, I start gravitating towards the bad boys at the club. And you know, at 23 and a half years sober, I went on a golf trip down to South Carolina, which I'd been on many times before. They all knew I didn't drink, but this time they had other stuff. And we got back from golf, and this guy laid rails out, and I picked up like I hadn't spent one day in AA ever. So now I go into like an 8-month spiral of way more lying, cheating, just all kinds of, it was just horrible. And my health was, I'm starting to not feel good. And I get diagnosed with cancer. And it was just another reason for me to use more. And I was like not an everyday user at this point, because I was telling myself, well, you're not drinking, so, you know, it's okay. You could just stop doing this whenever you want to. Whew, man, all the lies I told myself. So anyway, you know, that, man, it just, God, it ended me in so many ways. And I was just dying inside. And I have 4 kids who count on me for everything. And on the outside, you know, I think I'm being normal. And you know, it's not the truth. You know, I was angry. And I was mean. And I hated myself again. And I knew all these feelings really well. So anyway, they do an intervention on me. They find out everything that I'm doing. And I go to rehab. I'm in rehab 2 days. My wife calls me. She's like, I'm divorcing you. You know, you're not welcome here anymore. Like, you know, I own the house. You know, like I was still like in that mode, you know, and then like, my God, you know. So I go to rehab and I get detoxed. And now I'm in rehab with all these people, and I had 24 years. I know everything about AA, you know, so I'm just kidding myself again. And it's just over and over and over again. And I got out and I stayed sober for a little while, and I really tried to go to meetings. I was going to a lot of meetings. I was living in a recovery house, and I'm doing all this stuff to try and get my stuff back. And I'm doing all this stuff to try and get my kids. Like, it's okay, it's me, you know? And, you know, it wasn't long after that, you know, I drank, you know? And after not drinking for so long, I'll tell you what, man, it's like, that's a wake-up call. You know, it's all the same. It doesn't matter if the flavors are different. The result is the same. And I'll take it to the next level every time. So I drank myself into just absolute sickness. My kids came over one day, all 4 of them. They were like, you got to do something. So I wound up going to rehab again. So fast forward a couple years later, and here I am in front of you. You know? But that last time, something happened to me. Because I wasn't bouncing back as quick. And I was really sick and tired of me. And when I got out, I started going to meetings, and I was like, I don't know, it was probably like, I don't even know how long it was, but like, I'm going to meetings and I'm not feeling it, and I'm trying to feel it, and I'm trying to talk to God, and I'm not feeling anything, and I'm just absolutely out of my mind. And I started praying, and I was like, God, you know. And I had sponsors, like, along the beginning there again. But, you know, I would pick the guy who like, had more time than me, but I knew, like, I'd never have to call him. You know, like, that's who I wanted. You know, I mean, I'm not kidding myself here. It's like, you know, I want the easy way out. I want the easier, softer way every time, you know. But this time I was like, I was praying to God a lot because, like, I knew I was going to pick up again. And I couldn't go through that again. Like, it was the first time where I was like, you know, really, like, I was really trying and it wasn't working. So I prayed and, you know, like they say, when the student's ready, the teacher will appear. And, you know, I prayed for a sponsor. I don't know if I ever did that before. And 2 days later, I met my sponsor. You know, and we started working on the book. And it's funny because, like, I was in a really weird space after I relapsed from all that time. You know, I can't really explain it yet, but it was just, it's just like you're in this, like, this fog. You know, I wanted to be better. I wanted to be more productive. I wanted to be whatever I wanted me to be. But I had, God was not in the picture at all. You know, and, you know, starting to read the book again. You know, and we started with a doctor's opinion. And, you know, I started to hear things that I could relate to. Because I was spiritually dead, you know, and I had no chance at anything unbeknownst to me because I'd relied on myself for everything for so long. And, you know, I don't normally do this, but I want to read this the right way. On page 30, there's a line that jumped out at me. And this is before we really started doing the work. It says, we learned that we had to fully concede to our innermost selves that we were alcoholics. This is the first step in recovery. The delusion that we are like other people, or presently maybe, has to be smashed. So, when I read that, like, this time, it hit me. And I was like, you know, I had all kinds of rules about my alcoholism before. You know, like, just even going through the steps of people. I'd go through the steps of sponsors and get to, like, the fourth or fifth step, and then that was it. And, you know, he wasn't cutting it, and I'd move on to another one, and maybe make it to seven or eight, you know. And then, you know, who did I harm, you know? Like, it's just, it was, like, the steps were so a la carte for me, you know. Whatever I needed at the time is what I got, and this time when I read that, I was like, oh my God, like, all that time I spent in here. And, you know, I don't even know if I ever really, like, admitted to myself, like, you know, I have this thing. This is me. This is what I'm dealing with, and it's okay. You know, because today I'm armed with a power greater than me. You know, and I don't know that I ever really got to this place before that I'm at right now. And as we moved forward through the steps and through the book and kept on working, begrudgingly at the time, I always say, like, he has these set of steps at his house that, I don't know, it's probably 20 steps to get up to the first floor where we usually do all the work. And, like, there was times when I first started doing my fourth step, it felt like a mile. You know, it was like, I used to have to drag myself up to the top of the steps. And, you know, but we kept on going. You know, and he stuck with me. And, you know, you get through that. And, you know, you start, things start to clear out. And, you know, I start realizing that it's okay. Like, I've lost everything. But I never had anything anyway. And none of it's mine. You know, it's all God's. So what am I really hanging on to? You know? And I chased that for so long. I was chasing a life that I thought I wanted for so long. You know? And it doesn't have to be that way. You know, I wake up in the morning now. I meditate. I hit my knees. You know, and God has to be first in my life. And the program is first in my life. I couldn't wait to get here tonight to speak, to share. You know, I realize today my primary purpose is to help another alcoholic to achieve sobriety, you know. And I got to be honest, like, none of you were on my list before, you know. And it takes a lot of weight off my shoulders. Like, somebody like me who's just so self-consumed at all times, narcissist, whatever you want to call me, you know, whatever I've been called. It's just so relieving to me. You know, I can walk free today and, you know, do I stumble all the time? You know, do I make mistakes all the time? You know, and that's okay because it's stuff I used to beat myself up about. You know, I'm willing today to do whatever it takes, you know, to get another day. And I'm willing to take, you know, to continue to move forward. You know, I can't say that I was ever like that before. You know, I think I wanted to get sober before so that I could be like other people. And that's a really freaky place to be. You know, and I don't think I did it consciously at the time, but absolutely. You know, I mean, there was times I woke up and I'd say to my ex-wife, like, dude, like, I wish I could wake up normal once. You know? And it's okay. It's not going to happen for me. But I'm better today than I'm better than I was before. Because today I have a higher power who loves me and that I count on and I trust. You know? And, man, I walked a long way through this life on my own will. And, I don't want to do that anymore. You know, and it's like all the stuff that I wanted back when I took my hands off it, stuff happens, you know. When I take my hands off things, like, God makes things happen in my life. And I don't ask God for stuff anymore. I'm like, God, please, if I win the Powerball this Saturday, like, I'll take care of everybody. Just, I'd be at the Porsche dealer in 2 seconds. You know, it's not the truth. You know, I'll go back and get another degree and I'll be so smart. Yeah. I'm not doing that either. You know, I know me. But it's like, there's that stupid stuff. Like, none of that matters to me anymore. You know? So if you're sitting on anything, my suggestion would be to you to make sure that you're doing the work. Because I didn't for a long time. I really didn't. I ran AA my way. And it got me what I got. You know? We're almost at the hour. I think that's it. Thanks.